I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today, I'm here with attorney Kevin Bars, a public defender with more than 25 years experience, who works out of the New London Court where major crimes are tried. Good afternoon, Kevin. Could you tell us what exactly is a public defender and who's entitled to one?
Good afternoon, Karen. I'd be happy to. We represent people charged with all levels of crimes in the state of Connecticut who are indigent. And it's basically people that can't afford a lawyer. It's very important if you're going to, the government's going to try to take somebody's freedom, that they have representation. So we want to make sure that people that can't afford a lawyer still are entitled to really good representation for their cases.
And can you cite the constitutional basis for that?
Well, yeah, there's basically constitutional provisions that people are entitled to counsel, and that's our sworn mission, basically. We are obligated by the Constitution and by statute to help people in these certain situations.
Great. And now, Kevin, let's talk about you and your work a little bit. You graduated from Waterford High School, Boston College, and the New England School of Law, and you've basically been working you worked a little bit in other courts, but you landed at what we call the Part A court in New London 25 years ago?
Yeah, 28 at this point, yeah.
And you have represented some people accused of some of the most serious crimes. In all disclosure, I covered courts for many years, and I saw Kevin standing shoulder to shoulder with people accused of sexual assault, rape, murder, robbery. And one of the things that stood out to me, Kevin, was that the compassion that you had for your clients. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Thanks. Yeah, that's what this is all about, basically. I was lucky to be trained by some of the most compassionate people I've ever met. I lucked out getting an internship at the A Court. A girl that I had dated in the past had done an internship there, and I ran into her at a bar. She said, "Hey, you should intern for these guys. They would love you and you would love them." And I wasn't really sure I wanted to stay with law school at the point. And so I was home for the summer and I called down to the court and said, "Do you guys take interns?" And I got Pete Salieri on the phone, who was a great attorney. I mean, just a great attorney and a great guy. And his brother had been my seventh grade science teacher. So I said, "Are you John's brother? Yeah, you went to Waterford High. Yeah, you went to New England School of Law. I went there. Is this a practical joke? As someone put, because we had too much in common." He said, "Come on down." And that was how I started my internship, and I never left. And he and Bruce Sturman, when I was interning there in summer, I just couldn't believe what they did, how they did it, how smart they were, how compassionate they were. They never turned anybody away. They never turned anybody down. And they did everything that they could to help people that were really in the worst spot in their life. I fell in love with it. I just thought, I want to finish law school. I want to do this. I want to work here. And it worked out, luckily. And then they hired me at GA10, the lower court. Tom Haley was my boss there, a spectacular person, a spectacular lawyer, one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. Again, heart of gold, would do anything for anybody. And Judge McMahon, who unfortunately recently passed away, had a heart of gold. So these are the people I was around. These are the people that trained me. These are the people that taught me how to do it. And it just seemed like a great fit for me. And what we always try to do is help people at their lowest point, however we can. And I think you have to be a compassionate person in order to do this job. Luckily for me, I've been able to hire two new people recently, Mike Miller and Amy Mahon, who are incredibly compassionate people. I was lucky enough to be around them when they closed GA10 during the pandemic and they came to work at our court. And I'm watching the two of them, how they handle their clients, how they talk to people, how they pull people in and help them. And I went, boy, if we can hire new people, I want to hire these two, because it's the compassion that they show that sets them apart from.
And I have written about you and your work a lot, Kevin. And in this story that I wrote in 2016, when you were kind of appointed to be the person in charge of the public defenders. I said, easygoing and congenial, Bars has a knack for pointing out redeeming qualities of defendants, even though they are accused of heinous crimes. Just because somebody did a bad thing doesn't mean they're a bad person, Bars said. Can you explain that a little bit more?
I could. You know who actually sort of taught me that language was an attorney from Eastline named Ron Stevens. So I don't know if you've ever met Ronnie, and he's just a great guy. And he had been practicing forever. And one of the things that we used to do a lot when we were younger was watch the good attorney. I wouldn't call Ronnie older, but the attorneys that were older than me, right? We used to watch him in court to see kind of what they did. And he came in one day to do a sentencing argument in front of Judge McMahon, and he said, you got to look at it like an accounting ledger. This guy has all these positive things in the plus column, and he did this one minus, right? And when you balance it out, which is what the judge is supposed to do, the balance should tip in his favor because he's done so many good things in life. And I've always thought, dealing with the clients that we deal with, a lot of them are just desperate and they've fallen on hard times and they're not bad people. Now, we have certainly met bad people in our job. They stand out. We kind of know who they are when we meet them. But for the most part, and all of us that have been doing this forever say this, they're good people that have done something bad. And you just talk to them, where did you go to school? What are you doing with your kids? And they'll open up and sort of tell you the good parts about their life. So it's rare that we get somebody who we would say would be a sociopath who just like really has no redeeming qualities. And there are some. We unfortunately have some cases pending now where that's the case. But for the most part, what we see are desperate people doing desperate things who really do want to change their life, especially when they hit rock bottom and they hit jail. That's usually the last straw where someone will want to make a change. And some people don't change and aren't ready for it, but many do.
How do you filter out I don't want to say noise, but the response that you must get from emotional survivors of crimes, victims of crimes, and the people who say, how can you represent that person?
Well, one way to look at it, again, this is a line from Pete Salieri, that unfortunately in people's lives, especially when they're younger, people are into alcohol and sometimes you get behind the wheel and you shouldn't be driving. We've all probably driven at one point and shouldn't have. Did you run right to the police and turn yourself in when you, you know, drove your car and you shouldn't have that night? No. So I don't get a lot of grief about how can you represent those people. And sometimes when you do, you just politely walk away from the person and just not engage with them. But I think more people are interested in more of the nuances of it. I know those TV shows about CSI and all those things are big and popular and people want to know what's going on with court and want to know about your cases. So we don't really get a whole lot of that, but it's almost like when people do want to engage you in that way, you're not really going to change their mind anyway. So we really just don't engage with them.
Another thing that I learned while covering the courts was that public defenders can sometimes get a bad rap, but they are actually the attorneys who are most familiar with the judge, the prosecutors, the victim advocates. You know, they know sort of the going rate, as I've heard it described, for certain crimes. They know what kind of a deal they might be able to get. Could you talk about that a little bit?
That's 100% true. And I've made a lot of friends doing this in private practice over the years from various other things besides the law. Some of my basketball buddies are lawyers and police officers and the like. So I have people from all walks of life sort of calling me about strange things, hit me up for advice. And a lot of my buddies who are in private practice who dabble in the criminal work but don't do a lot of it, it's almost like I'm on speed dial because I talk to them a lot about what their case is about and how they should handle it. So I think with the people in our office, we got a pretty good reputation. And a lot of the private attorneys in town, when people come to them and say, you know, I want to hire you for this, but I'm not sure about the money, they say, go see Kevin, Fred, Mike, or Amy because they're going to take great care of you. So I think we have a good reputation. We don't get a lot of, well, some people say you're a public pretender, you're not a real lawyer, all that. I think we used to hear that more when we were younger, but we just don't get a lot of that because we really do a nice job for our clients. And a lot of it has to do with returning phone calls, being there for them, going to see them at the jail, just doing the things that you need to do to be a good attorney for them. I think part of what you said before, being compassionate and having an open heart with people gets you a long, long way in this business.
The New London courthouse where you work has a great reputation, even when attorneys come in from other areas, as being just a great place to do business. Everybody is congenial, even though they are, you know, on opposite sides of a case. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're professional adversaries, but that's it. So we were, again, lucky enough to start off, a lot of us together, when we were in our 20s at GA10. And the older people who were the senior people at the courthouse, that's how they acted toward each other, and they brought us into it. And a lot of that was Tom Haley, Judge McMahon, Vince Hauser, the older folks that were there. And it just stayed that way. So we used to... Judge McMahon organized a softball team one year. We used to play softball all the time together. We would go out to dinner a lot together. We would play basketball together at lunch, sometimes at the Martin Center. So, and then you'd go into court and beat each other up when you were in court. But it was almost like we used to laugh and say it was like that Bugs Bunny cartoon with the sheepdog, where they, morning, Ralph, good morning, and they punch in, and then they go beat the hell out of each other, and then they punch out. That's basically what it became. So not all courts are like that. A lot of us have been working together 27, 28, 29 years together. There's no fighting at work, and we're really careful to keep it at that congenial level because it makes the day a lot better. We all like going to work. We all enjoy spending time with each other during the day. And all we do is argue with each other about cases all day, but it never gets out of hand and it never gets personal. And in other courthouses, that's not the case. I worked in Hartford for years when Fred DiCaprio was my boss, and it was a bit of a snake pit up there. There were people fighting with each other all the time. Inter-office, amongst the offices, the judges fighting with each other. It was not a nice place. And then I was lucky enough to come back here home, where everybody just, you walk in and you go, oh, wow, this is so much better. The vibe in here is just so much better, you know?
I 100% agree with you. And by the way, we can't not mention the judicial marshals, who are just some of the best people.
Oh, they're great. We're there, you know, in every office in the building, there's great people. The clerk's office, the marshals, they'll do anything for you. Some of them are my favorite people at work. The victim's advocate office, Leanne, and the other girl.
That's Stephanie.
Stephanie, yep. They're great. We're just lucky to be around good people. And I think part of that is we're real careful when we hire, is this person going to be a good fit? Because in years past, people have come and not gotten along with other people there, and they haven't lasted because that's not the culture there. They want to come in and fight with each other, and I'm going to file a grievance against this person and do this. And you're like, whoa, we don't do that here. You just go in and have a conversation with them. There's no need to get ugly and fight. So...
And now on to a couple of your cases that might stand out. One of your most recent ones was of Marcus Fisher. You represented a boy, right? A teenager, yeah, who killed his grandparents. Yes. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Unfortunately for Marcus, he suffers from schizophrenia. And it was, around New London County, there's a lot of people that have mental illness, and I'm sure that's like that everywhere, but we're pretty keen on it, or tuned into it here anyway, because we represent so many people with it. We all think, this may not be true, but we think it, when they closed the state hospital back in about 1995, that a lot of the people we've talked to over the years say they basically just moved into the surrounding area from the state hospital, had kids, and so we've got a significant population that suffers from mental illness that used to live at the state hospital. So we think anecdotally. We've never been able to, you know, study it or prove it or anything, but I was working at the lower court when they closed the state hospital, and we were inundated with mental health cases, and we quickly became experts in bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and antisocial personality disorder, and every other thing you could think of. It was like, man, I didn't go to medical school. I went to law school. What's this? You know? So you had to get pretty on board with it pretty quick. So we've, over the years, represented a lot of people with schizophrenia, and it's one of those things, you know it when you see it, you know? And the first day I met Marcus, I went, oh no, he's pretty significantly mentally ill. And then you watch the interview with him and the police, and he's saying a lot of bizarre sort of rambling stuff where you go, yep, that's probably what this is. So we had our doctor examine him, the state had their doctor examine him, and they both came to the conclusion that he was too mentally ill to know what he was doing when he killed them, you know? So it was really sad because he does come from a good family. His uncle is very upset, obviously, that his parents were killed by his nephew. His mom was very upset. Her parents are gone. Her son did it. It was hard on everybody. And but Marcus, luckily, is now at the, you know, at Whiting, which is the Locke State Mental Hospital, where I can't imagine he'll ever get out, but he needs the treatment. And this is our constant gripe, that it seems like to get the proper mental health treatment that you really need, you have to do something horrible to get committed. And that's backwards.
Yeah, you've given us some story ideas as we're sitting here talking.
Yeah,
Kevin, would you talk about an older case that you have involving one of the other main themes, I guess, drugs? When a man from Essex was killed, what was your role in that? And I think three or four, a man from Essex came over to buy some drugs to New London and ended up getting, was he beaten and left in a pond?
We don't know. He was killed. And so, yeah, it was a case that Fred DiCaprio and I did together. The guy's name was Aben Britton, was the defendant we had. There were two other co-defendants, Gregory Pierre and Jeffrey Smith. And it was back when there was a death penalty, and they were death penalty eligible, so they were charged with the death penalty. And so we went to trial, and we got verdicts that precluded the death penalty. So he still got 85 years in jail, but we counted it as a win because Aben Britton, we called AB. We really liked AB. We knew he was involved in it, but not to the degree the others, we thought. And he was a real troubled kid from New York City who, we got these records from him from treatment places he had been to in New York when he was a little kid. There was one that we got that stood out, that he lived in the Bronx and he took a train into Manhattan at 6 years old by himself, went to the police department and said, where are all the gangs? And they said, what are you talking about? And he said, I hate my life and I want to die and I want to find those gangs that are killing people and have somebody kill me. That was age six, right? That was how he grew up. He grew up in the really tough part of the Bronx and some pretty heavy-duty projects. And he was trying to make the best of go of life as he could. He wound up here with a girl and got hooked up with these guys. And we knew he was involved because his bloody palm print was on the car. We had our own experts examine it. They said, yeah, that's his palm print. Good luck explaining how your bloody palm print is on the car that was pushed into the duck pond next to the police department in Waterford, which is about 3 feet deep, if it's that. So the police are coming to work for their morning shift, and they notice a car in the duck pond, and they're like, what the hell is this? And there's blood on it and handprints and everything else, so they piece everything back together, and these guys get charged with it. So that was
no
definitely... No victim in the car, and then they later found him, unfortunately, in Bates's Woods.
James Connor was his name.
Yeah, his body was mostly decomposed. Some parent was down there with his kid using a remote-controlled car, and the car went up a ramp into the woods, and the kid went looking for his car, and there was a body in the woods, and that's how they found him.
So another theme that I noticed that you just reminded me of is that some people say they're sick of hearing about what a bad life people had and they should, you know, be responsible for their actions. But people often don't understand sort of the depth of a bad life, like what a bad life really means. And it's doing that kind of work and getting to know your clients and telling these stories to the judge and the prosecutors and juries in some cases, right? That really makes you special as a public defender.
Oh, thanks. I don't think I'm any more special than other people. I've been around great people. When I worked in Hartford you know Fred DiCaprio.
I do.
He was my boss. And I was lucky enough to get that job because he was good friends with Tom Haley, who was my boss. And I wasn't qualified for that when I went up there. There was no way I was. And Fred liked me because we had known each other socially for years, and he took a chance and hired me, taught me how to do trials along with some other people up there. There were guys up there, Bruce Lorenzen, Dave Smith, John Watson, Sarah Bernstein, Jeff Hutko, bunch of people, Mike Isco. These guys have been doing trials forever, and they were really good at it, and they were great with their clients. And it's like that's what you did when you do the job. Like if you don't do it that way, then you're not doing it right. That's basically it. So I appreciate your compliment, but I've just been around a ton of people who are really good, compassionate. I would say just great people. Like they are in difficult situations with their cases, and they do what they can to help another human being who's really down on their luck.
I think we could talk about this all day, Kevin, because your work is so interested and you're so passionate about it. But we do have to wrap up. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I just honestly appreciate the support you've given me over the years, and people in the community seem to really respond to what we're doing. It's sometimes hard to go out when you run into people because they read about you in the paper and they want to know about this case and that case. I'm like, I really can't talk about it, but I appreciate your interest in it and everything. So it always helps me that you write such nice stuff about me in the paper. So I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, Kevin. And of course, I've kind of moved on to another position, but be sure that the day will be following you.
Thanks.